Hello, and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. As always, we'll have a roundup of the main news stories of the week, a cultural section, and some music for you. And this week's discussion will be with the editor of the Odessa Review, Vladislav Davidson. We'll focus on this exciting new publication and on the spirit and role of Odessa. But first, the news.
Today, the Ukraine-Canada Free Trade Agreement entered into force. Now, experts have already called the deal an historic one and claim that both sides will benefit.
President Donald Trump signing a bill slapping new sanctions on Russia Wednesday, even as he calls the bill itself, quote, significantly flawed.
SMM monitors based there heard approximately 150 explosions caused by mortar rounds, as well as intense heavy machine gun, small arms, and automatic grenade launcher fire.
Well, on the 1st of August, the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement came into force. Ukraine's Prime Minister Volodymyr Groysman said that the recently completed agreements on a free trade area, FTA, with the European Union and Canada open new opportunities and markets for Ukraine. And the US has imposed additional sanctions on Russia and reaffirmed support for Ukraine. On the 2nd of August, President Trump grudgingly signed legislation imposing sanctions on Russia and limiting his own authority to lift them. It had passed Congress with overwhelming bipartisan support and prompted Moscow to respond by ordering reduction of U.S. diplomatic staff in Russia. The act is important for Ukraine. It reaffirms that, quote, it is the policy of the United States to support the government of Ukraine in restoring its sovereign and territorial integrity, to condemn and oppose all of the destabilizing efforts by the government of the Russian Federation in Ukraine in violation of its obligations and international commitments, to never recognize the illegal annexation of Crimea by the government of the Russian Federation or the separation of any portion of Ukrainian territory through the use of military force. Furthermore, according to the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, under the new Russia sanctions package, the U.S. has allocated $30 million to Ukraine for energy security and has also undertaken to, quote, assist in promoting reform in regulatory oversight and operations in Ukraine's energy sector, including the establishment and empowerment of an independent regulatory organization to encourage and support fair competition, market liberalization, and reliability in Ukraine's energy sector, to help Ukraine and the United States allies and partners in Europe reduce their dependence on Russian energy resources, especially natural gas, which the government of the Russian Federation uses as a weapon to coerce, intimidate, and influence other countries, unquote. Significantly, the Act also states that the United States will, quote, continue to oppose the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, given its detrimental impact on the European Union's energy security, gas market development in Central and Eastern Europe, and energy reforms in Ukraine, unquote, the Act said. The latter measure has raised eyebrows in Brussels, and some senior EU officials have called on Washington not to apply this sanction unilaterally. And for domestic news, well, on the domestic front, the country has been gripped by a heat wave. This and the holiday season, with Parliament in recess, has resulted in a relatively quiet period. But anti-corruption activists have accused the authorities of broadening what they claim is a campaign of harassment against them. On the 2nd of August, the Anti-Corruption Action Centre, one of Ukraine's leading watchdogs, reported that the tax police, an agency that was supposed to have been liquidated at the beginning of the year, has opened a criminal case against the organisation. The details have not been elaborated, and the tax police say only that the case was opened after an appeal from a third party. On the 22nd of March, President Poroshenko signed into law requirements that oblige anti-corruption activists to file electronic assets and income declarations identical to those of public officials. Despite protests from inside and outside of the country, this measure has not yet been revoked. And the war goes on in eastern Ukraine. Skirmishing and shelling on the front line initially subsided during the week, but intensified again towards the end of it. On the 28th of July, the representatives of the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission reported that Russian-backed forces had located heavy military equipment in residential areas of Donetsk. On the 2nd of August, an OSCE cargo truck was stopped and blocked by them for 7 hours. Overall, during the last week, 2 Ukrainian soldiers were killed in action and 20 wounded. I'm delighted to welcome today to our discussion, focusing on a major theme, Vladislav Davidson, who is the editor of an exciting new, still, a year and a bit onwards, magazine journal called The Odessa Review. Tell us, Vladislav, how did you get involved with this project?
Well, I was always, you know, connected to Ukraine, but I became very much a Ukrainian patriot for a very simple and almost banal reason, is that when I was a student in Paris in my early 20s, I met a beautiful and charming Ukrainian girl, and she was good enough to put up with me for several years, and then she became my wife, and I became a Ukrainian patriot. She's from Odessa.
Oh, a kind of latter day Roxolana.
Exactly right, exactement. And I, you know, I started working as a foreign correspondent in Ukraine in my late 20s, and I worked for various magazines and newspapers, and I was Tablet Magazine's European culture correspondent, and I worked for the late departed English language Ukrainian television station Ukraine Today as their Paris correspondent for a little bit. They needed someone who spoke English in Paris, and my friend Peter Dickinson, who was the head of that channel.
We know Peter. He's been on this program recently, and also his editor of Lviv Today was on a recent program too.
Yeah, and also Business Ukraine. He's a fantastic guy and a good friend of mine, and he brought me aboard to work with him on Ukraine Today, and then Ukraine Today quickly folded because, you know, that's the way things are in the world and occasionally in Ukrainian media. And then Peter and I were sitting around with my wife and my friend Haris Youssef, my publisher, and we were thinking, you know, this country really needs a journal of ideas, a magazine about culture, about policy, and I underline policy rather than politics, and about ideas, about culture as it's lived today. There's far too much politics in Ukraine. Everyone's concerned about politics and history all the time. There's so much fantastic art and literature here in the last 3 years.
It's politics or petty politics?
Well, both. I mean, all politics is petty politics and all politics is grand, right?
Well,
but it's not
like
policy.
So.
It's not policy.
It's not policy.
Yeah.
And there is indeed a lack of a kind of policy analytical framework and policy formulation framework too, because there's very little discussion about policy, even in Parliament. Bills appear, but there's no real discussion about the strategic elements of policy making.
Yeah, about political science, political philosophy, the origins of things.
Yeah.
You know.
Or even the comparative perspective with other countries,
right?
To put things in perspective, where are we in the scheme of things? Lessons learned, best practices, that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, you even talk to reformist MPs; they don't really even know which side of a spectrum in a real country or left-right spectrum axis they fall on. They don't really know whether they're liberals or conservatives. They don't think in those ways. So there's a real gap. We saw it,
but. Is the balance more in favor of culture and lifestyle, or is it going to be, as the journal develops, more on politics and policy formulation?
No, we're I think you would say 80% culture oriented, and culture is always, of course, political. We don't.
Certainly in this context.
Yeah, in this country, certainly, yeah.
To be Ukrainian, to be Jewish, to be Polish in this part of the world, to be Russian, what does it mean?
Right.
You know.
What does it mean to be
a
Russian speaker who's in favor of Ukrainian nationalism and wants nothing to do with Russian irredentism and chauvinism.
Identifies with Ukraine.
Right. There
are people like Kurkov, right, who write in Russian, one of the best literary exports, and yet are identify with an independent Ukraine and support it strongly.
Absolutely. And there are many such people. And there's a lot of culture that's neither Soviet nor, traditionally Ukrainian in any kind of...
So, if I understand you right, you're giving a voice to the political nation that's being born, the
civic nationalism,
right, opposed to the ethnocentric one of old.
That's exactly right. I have no truck with ethnic nationalism of kind of any sort. I never liked that, and I'm really attracted to the cosmopolitan aspect of contemporary Ukrainian culture as it's developing, where everyone's bilingual and everyone is starting to learn English. And I mean, the most interesting things here are taking place in art and fashion and literature.
Right. Now, it's also very interesting, and I would say significant, that you call it the Odessa Review, not the Kyiv, the Lviv, the Kharkiv Review, why Odessa?
Well, first of all, my base is there in terms of my family and my reporting. I lived there for a long time, and I love Odessa. It's a fantastic town, and it's this place of fabled cosmopolitanism. So if a new Ukraine will work as it's supposed to, or as we've been promised, or we promised ourselves that we will work, and I hope it does work, and I'll do my best, just as many other people are doing their best, to make it work, it's going to look like Odessa, which is to say multi-ethnic, cosmopolitan, forward-looking, with ties to the outside world, with ties to all these other ethnic diasporas who help out and they come back, and they have a very interesting tradition in terms of remittances and coming back and keeping kind of nostalgia.
A kind of cultural Porto Franco.
Exactly right.
That's a very interesting idea, and I think it's really a great need for this country. I think it was very, very important for Ukraine during the Maidan and during the Revolution of Dignity that Odessa, at least its elite, its cultural elite, sided with the reformist Ukrainian forces and injected their sense of what it is to be a Ukrainian in the 21st century into this ongoing project.
Yeah, it wasn't apparent that would have happened to me when I first started coming to Ukraine in 2010-11, when I was reporting from Odessa in 2011-12. It wasn't apparent that would be the case in such a situation. Although I did see already during 2012, before the elections, I had a sense that something bad would happen after the language law, because it was an MP from Odessa who
Professor signed. Dr. Kivalov.
Yeah. Right.
Among others.
No comment. But, it was apparent that something was brewing, and then, in some senses, all the bad things and all the good things come out of Odessa, so...
Yes, well, it still remains a city of its own, with its own not
Absolutely.
Just cultural identity, but the way things are done and its approach to matters generally. Anyway... let's look at the content now. I have before me two issues, the 8th and the 7th. On the 8th, I want to point out to our listeners who unfortunately can't see this very, very attractive publication. On issue 8, it says The Odessa Review, a journal from the new Ukraine. It's got Yuri Andruhovich on beat poetry. It's got Jamala, the voice of Ukraine, as articles. It's got a special report on urbanism. It's got Irina Karpa, an interview. And interestingly, it's got a piece on the life and death of Yevgeny Yevtushenko, the famous Russian poet who had some origins that were Ukrainian. And at the bottom it says events, culture, business, and lifestyle. Well, an amazingly good read, fantastic illustrations, graphics, etc., very well chosen. So, as I said at the outset, something that should set new standards. Tell us a little bit about the latest issue that's at the printers. You've just come from the printers, number 9 and 10. What is planned now?
Oh, yeah, thank you. The 9th issue is dedicated to the film festival, the Odessa Film Festival, which is a fantastic institution that Ukraine should be very proud of. Actually, Ukrainian culture is very festival-centric in many ways that other countries, you know, that's less of a framework for orienting culture. But festivals are very important here. The Alpha Jazz Festival, the film festival, Molodist Film Festival in the autumn in Kyiv. Festivals like Gogol Fest, this is very important here. And there are reasons why that is so, maybe less or more interesting, but the summer, especially in Odessa and Ukraine, has a lot of festivals. So we just had two excellent music festivals, and we had a film festival coming up in a week and a half. So we put out an issue for the film festival and to prepare people for their visit to the movies.
Well, my question will be, as somebody that's observing the scene as far as culture and cinema in particular are concerned, yes, the festivals have been around for some time now, and certainly they're very important. But I think what's been lacking is the content, quality Ukrainian cinematography. And hopefully now that the government has decided and parliament to support the funding of Ukrainian filmmaking, that these gaps will be filled. We've seen some fairly good films appearing. I don't mean the ones that were expected to be blockbusters, maybe the quieter ones, but with more profound, deeper themes.
Yeah, Ukraine's on the path to becoming the new Romania in terms of Romanian-style new wave. Everyone keeps talking about Ukraine being capable of breaking out. There are a lot of structural impediments to Ukraine breaking out into being the success story of European filmmaking, but it's absolutely possible, and it is true that the government's belatedly got behind. A few laws have been passed which are absolutely necessary for backing Ukrainian film production, especially, this is very technical, but maybe it's boring for some people, but tax rebates are actually very important. And Ukraine was always falling behind other filmmaking nations because the filmmakers from other countries were not getting the same tax rebates that they were getting, let's say, from the Czechs or the French when they went to film there.
Sure. It would be very interesting to look at the example of Italy, say, in the
50s.
Well,
actually, France is the direct example. The Ukrainian film industry looks very much like the French film industry in the fact that it's half government-sponsored. The French really have homegrown film production, and they really can compete with the English-language market because they put a lot of money into it and because they have government sponsorship and because they have an entire infrastructure of film production plus taxation and everything. They're really serious about it.
And planning ahead for issue 10?
Issue 10 is going to be about literature. And I think you've agreed to have a little piece in issue 10, right?
I hope so. I hope that my piece will be worthy of such distinguished company as you have. As I said, you've got Andruchovich, Karpa, and others just in the very last issue that I'm holding in my hand. Okay, we'll see how that develops. Tell me, among your own personal favorites from the pieces that you've published in the last 8 that are tangible, that we can see.
There are a couple of things that I'm extremely proud of. I'm really proud of being the first publication of Sergei Loiko's Airport in the English language. Loiko's a real character. That book did really well. I don't know if your listeners know about Sergei Loiko's Airport.
Just remind us.
It's a novelization by a Russian journalist who had spent his entire career working for the LA Times of the Battle of Donetsk Airport. And so he went out there and he was with the cyborgs in the airport during the bombardment, I think for about 4 or 5 days, and he came back and he wrote a really interesting novel, a thriller. And I think that book sold 75,000 copies in Ukraine, which is quite a lot for a contemporary novel. And we were partners of the Ukrainian state for the 75th anniversary of Babyn Yar, the commemorations. So we had a special report in the 5th issue, or the 6th issue, was it, last September, which I was very proud of, that we could be involved in that. I'm very proud of my relationship with a very smart young British Ukrainian, Miss Miroslava Hartman, who owns the Triptych Gallery, who's really, really bright and a great light of contemporary Ukrainian culture. She's in her mid-20s, but she's so smart. And she is a...
And very attractive, too, well, I may add, as an observer. And also has the Oxford style and manners about her.
Patrimony, you know, that, yes. Patrimony, yichus, as we say in Yiddish. She has yichus. And she's our arts columnist, and she writes for us a fantastic piece every month on the arts in Ukraine. She's written about the importance of bringing back the legacy, a post-communist legacy of Taras Shevchenko. She's written a couple of fantastic pieces for us on various arts festivals, and she's just really good. I've been really blessed with really great collaborators.
Are you finding enough Ukrainians from Ukraine that know English well enough to write for you, or do you commission pieces that you translate?
About 60% of our pieces are written by locals, in fact. So I, as an editor, I have to do a lot of rewriting. When pieces come in Ukrainian or Russian, we have them translated. I think some people, like my friend Peter Zalmayev, who's fantastic and who lived for a long time in the States, writes very well and has a great style in English. They can write in English. People like Adrian Koretnitsky can write in English. People like, again, Ms. Miroslava Hartman can write in English. When people can't write in English simply because they haven't spent half their life in an English-speaking country, we help them along. So if any young people are listening to this, I'm really always open to ideas, and please shoot me an email.
Okay. That's another call and pitch. Now, let's ask you a little bit about the response so far. Okay, you say you've had a good response from those who have contributed. You've found distinguished individuals, writers, commentators, critics who have voluntarily come forward and are very happy to be associated with your publication. But generally, the response, who are you reaching out to at this stage, and how effective are you in getting your, let's call it, a product across?
Well, we're writing something for the world, in the sense that there's a Ukrainian diaspora which is very hotly interested, and it's involved in America, in Canada, in Western Europe, in Britain. There is a diaspora which is very interested and doesn't quite always know what's going on, just because it's very difficult to live in another country and know what's going on. There are international elites who are very much interested. Ukraine's interesting now because of, obviously, all that's happened in terms of state building in the last 3 years, nation building. There's a rising English-speaking Ukrainian cultural elite. A lot of the young people who are really smart and really ambitious and really talented and really civically oriented, now filling up the ministries, the civil service, they're all English speakers. People like the very, very talented Alyona Trigub, I can give you other names, you know, Mustafa Nayom really likes our magazine. There are lots of young people like that who are really connected to the outside world. This rising new generation of young Ukrainians are really cosmopolitan, and they're really plugged in terms of what's going on to the outside world. That's really great. We very much want contemporary Ukrainians to read us. It's an English language magazine. Maybe in the future we'll have a Ukrainian edition. That's something we're thinking about. That's not somewhere we're yet doing that yet. But for the most part, Ukrainians, locals, have been very excited also, because it's not that we're geniuses. It's just that this is an almost obvious thing that's no one done before. No one's done in 25 years of Ukrainian independence just a cool intellectual literary magazine. Kritika is a really great thing.
Yeah, I think that's the closest.
Kritika's great. I read them. I like them very much. They are they're very good people. They're academic, and they're very policy oriented in the way that maybe we're a bit more culture oriented. There is a space for something that's halfway between The New Yorker and Snob, and maybe Fantastic Man.
And The New York Review of Books.
Yeah, the Odessa Review of Books.
Which The New York Review of Books, I think, is what Critica initially based itself on.
Yeah, it's a great model. That's a great publication, and that's a historical model that really created a spectrum of being in the world as a writer. That's great, but it's not for everybody, obviously.
And I read in your letter from the editor-in-chief in the eighth issue, interested readers can now find the magazine all across the country, as well as on their Ukrainian Airlines flight, as well as in certain spots of New York City and Paris. So you say the journal is, in this sense, becoming internationalized as post-Soviet Ukrainian culture itself.
That's great that you found that in all the things that I wrote in that introduction, all the blather you pointed to the right gem of a sentence. Thank you.
Anything else that we should add? Looking ahead. Any major plans?
Any major plans? We're doing an issue on Ukrainian Jewish relations with our partners in the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter. That's a great organization.
And you yourself again are Vladislav Davidson, the editor-in-chief of Odessa Review. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, Vladislav. I wish you a lot of success, and I hope that in my own humble way I can contribute.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now for culture. Well, it's midsummer. Hot. But Kyiv is bubbling with cultural activities. Free open-air concerts and performances in Mariinsky Park, and classical music in the Botanical Gardens. But for those, you need to buy a ticket, and tons of live music in clubs. Like last Sunday's sold-out show by Gypsy Lyre, with guest appearance by the legendary Marika Burmaka in the ABC Docker pub in the Passage, just off the main street, Khreshchatyk. Museum exhibits abound. The National Art Museum of Ukraine is featuring Fedor Krychevsky, one of the most significant figures in Ukrainian modern art. Near Parliament, the Ukrainian War History Museum has exhibits dating from the ancient Scythians to artifacts from the current war in Donbass. It's on a tiny side street called Kryposny Provulok, just down the street from the Central Officers and Armed Forces of Ukraine building. And now for music. Here's a song for you. It's called Zabovai, which means forget, by the Kyiv-Kharkiv duo Dmytro Lazutkin, lyrics, and Boris Sevastyonov, music. If you listen carefully to the lyrics, you'll hear, forget what they used to write.
Особистими речами маятник розхитується кволо. Толя промиває очі чаєм, Толя промиває спиртом горло. На подвір'ї біснувата клава, щось кричить і додаємо роки. Розбирай потроху ці завали, йди собі по темряві глибокій.
Йди собі, бо що ти тут не бачив? Зі своїми шрамами і швами щастя, воно теж буває псячим. Йди собі дворами і ровами, наступай на знаки розділові. Проминай за теж ті штрихпунктири. Ми з тобою однієї крові, ми з тобою однієї віри. Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай усе, що вам казали, забувай, що не дожив до завтра. Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай.
Відпускай березою тополю, якби загубитись не хотіла, прибивай до спини свою долю, присобачуй голову до тіла, стугою засліплою злою, з певненістю вічного блукальця, хто б не гнався слідом за тобою, йди, і головне не озирайся.
Йди собі, бо що ти тут не бачив, зі своїми шрамами і швами щастя, воно теж буває псячим, йди собі, дворами і ровами, наступай на знаки розділові. Проминай за теж ті штрихпунктири. Ми з тобою однієї крові, ми з тобою однієї віри.
Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай все, що вам казали, забувай, що не дожив до завтра. Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай. Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай все, що вам казали, забувай, що не дожив до завтра. Забувай дороги і вокзали, до котрих вертатися не варто. Забувай.
And looking forward. Tune in next week for a new episode of Ukraine Calling and write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Громадське радіо in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.